it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Back in an all-too-familiar spot for your Philadelphia 76ers, where they are on the brink of elimination, and it never feels good when that is happening here in this city. Welcome to the PHLY Sixers podcast here, the playoff edition, answering the bell, something they are not doing down 3-1.
We got to answer the bell if they aren't.
Down 3-1, not happening with the basketball team. Yet another opportunity missed in game number 4. We discussed it plenty, of course, during our live show, reading the guys on allphly.com. Hope you are all diehards to read a lot of the work that they are putting out there. It's been tremendous throughout this playoff run. I would like it to keep going, to keep reading those things before we actually get into the offseason, but the Sixers are not cooperating right now. Along with me, hanging out. Good to be back with the guys. Derek Bodner, Kyle Newbeck, Brianna is producing. I'm Devon. All of you in the chat. And Kyle, man, this one, after every game, 4 games in the books, after every single one of them, we have looked back at each of those games and laying out points of emphasis of how they could have won the basketball game. Would they have swept the Knicks? No. They could have been 2-2 right now, maybe even 3-1. At worst, they could have been, you know, something totally different than being swept in this basketball series. But right now, man, everything that we've looked at with this basketball team, and even when we forecasted and gave our predictions, we thought it would be a highly competitive series, which it has been through the 4. But right now, they're in the worst possible position because there are still so many questions with this team after going through 4 games and, again, looking at facing elimination on Tuesday.
Yeah, right. Like, this deep into the series, we can say all the things we did about, don't they played well in New York, they had chances to win, whatever.
Right.
Better team at times in the series. Well, you're down 3-1 after 4 games, so eventually that stuff just does not matter. I went back last night, as I'm sure probably all of us did. I watched the entire fourth quarter as I was dissecting what went wrong, and it just struck me how they arrived here as a product of a bunch of different decisions, right? You could go back as far as 2019 when they signed Tobias Harris to a massive contract, anchored your future to his future in many ways, predates current management, most of the current players on the team. But that's been a big impact. But I want to focus more on, and I did focus more on in the writing I did about this game, on what they did this season, which is to say they did very little, right? Like their big moves, quote unquote, were the Harden trade. And the Harden trade was really a move that's setting up another move, right, at an undetermined date.
And that's not us editorializing. Daryl Morey was saying that all summer. We either trade, yes, Harden for a star, or we trade Harden for the pieces to get a star.
So their biggest trade was a trade that was a setup move, which they did get some useful stuff out of, useful role players on top of picks, but still a setup trade. Their deadline moves were to get Buddy Hield, who we've learned cannot play in this series or has not been able to stay on the floor in this series because he's been completely inept offensively. Moment has been too big for him. And frankly, the best move, at least from where we sit right now, in terms of the impact on the current team, is Kyle Lowry on the buyout. And the problem there is they're way too reliant on 38-year-old buyout market Kyle Lowry. He's starting. He's closing. He's been one of their most important and, frankly, one of their best players, which is not so much flattery of Lowry as it is an indictment on the rest of these guys. And then you look at New York, and I think what, if you're a Sixers fan or somebody who follows the league, what you'd be envious of with New York is that they were able to build this team, that second seed in the East, that was very close on the final day, but they were going to be one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference. They have a legitimate star in Jalen Brunson, who I don't think a lot of people would have predicted this trajectory for him, but certainly was very good when they got him and has taken his game up multiple levels since getting there. And as they've added to this team, as they got, you know, a guy like Dante DiVincenzo, he's been massively improved this year at an important skill. As they got OG Anunoby is the big one to me this year. And he represents the gap between the two philosophies. They pushed chips in. They said, we want to compete right now. We think we can go get a guy who improves our team right now and helps us into the future. And we're not so much concerned about preserving every last morsel of flexibility. And OG Anunoby was a difference-making player in that game. Like, if Jalen Brunson is number one at the top of the list for New York, and he was, OG is number two because he made a massive impact rebounding, made a big impact as a secondary creator, and he defended all five positions, including Joel Embiid yesterday. That's not only a guy the Sixers could have potentially traded for, that's a guy that now is probably completely off the board in this free agency class that they've set aside the cap space and the flexibility and all that for. So as they have said, and maybe rightfully so, we will see when they get there, they have banked a ton on what they're able to do this upcoming offseason, whether that's at the draft with trades and moving things around, free agency, throwing a max at a Paul George or somebody else, whatever it might be, they've put their eggs in that basket. And while they did that, other teams in the Eastern Conference, more specifically, the team that is currently up 3-1 on them, made moves to win right now. And the Sixers are not as good of a team as the Knicks because of that plan and that philosophy.
When I was driving in, there was a listening to the radio, and one of the hosts had written an article today titled, "When the Light Shine Brightest, Joel Embiid Shrinks." And obviously, when you look at that, 0-for-5 in the fourth quarter, 1.1 rebound, it's easy enough to make that case. If you have been watching these games, and that is your takeaway from these four games where they're down 3-1, we are watching a very different series. It is, you know, New York has the talent and the diversity where when their star, when their MVP candidate, and Brunson is a viable MVP candidate this year, I think I had him 6th on my last straw poll. He's right there on the cusp. When he shoots like 4-for-1,000,000 in the first two games, they're able to pull out wins in both of those games because they have the role players to step up and find ways to win. When Joel Embiid, who by the way is averaging 38 gosh darn points per game so far in this series, when Joel Embiid has
one leg,
on one leg and a
with a paralyzed face,
when Joel Embiid has one quarter, one fucking quarter where he can't play because he has played 32 minutes straight in the game, the entire team or entire town wants to run him out and make arguments why he can't be a winning player. This is a team that has categorically failed around Joel Embiid. You look at some of the stats without Joel Embiid on the floor, and they are mind-boggling. The Sixers, in 33 minutes without Joel Embiid, outscored by 38 points, are shooting 26% with Joel Embiid on the bench. 26% from the field. How the hell is that Joel Embiid's fault? And that is directly why Nick Nurse didn't feel comfortable sitting Joel Embiid at all in the fourth quarter, at all. And because of that, Joel Embiid was completely gassed. Again, same radio host I heard make, well, there are other players playing 40 minutes per night. Josh Hart's playing 40. Josh Hart, 6'5", 200 pounds, and didn't spend 2 months on the bench because of a knee surgery. That's not comparable. You can't ask Joel Embiid to play 32 minutes straight and get the best version of Joel Embiid. I think Nick Nurse made a mistake. I said that at the start of the fourth quarter. I think that ended up showing itself to be true. But that's true because the Sixers shoot 26% with Joel Embiid. I apologize for some of my F-bombs. The Sixers shoot 26 freaking percent with Joel Embiid on the bench and can't do anything right. And that comes back a little bit to the players on the court, for sure. I think Tyrese Maxey needs to be better. I'm a little stunned that in the 33 minutes without Joel Embiid on the floor, Kyle Lowry has only played 3 minutes. I think that's a miscalculation there from Nick Nurse. A lot of it comes back to Daryl Morey and the decision to punt at the trade deadline for greener pastures in the summer. We'll find out whether or not that is true or not, but all of that has set it up where you can't survive 4 minutes without Joel Embiid. It's preposterous. It is absolutely preposterous. And I just want to, I'll close this off because I feel like Devon introduced us and hasn't had a chance to talk here in the first 10 minutes of the show.
Hey, man, we're all good.
I haven't had a chance to be on this show all that often. And quite frankly, I'm a little punchy. I've been feeling under the last couple of days. It is so frustrating, the fact that, because I think, like, when we've seen Joel Embiid quote unquote crumble down a stretch, it's been decision making. I think for the most part in the fourth quarter last night, his decision making was fine. I think he made a real nice pass to Batum, who tried to dunk it on Josh Hart for reasons I'm still not sure. You're not 25 anymore. Stop doing it.
He was reinvigorated by the one he tried earlier.
Sure,
in the
and
game.
That one didn't work either. And he made a real nice kickout pass about a double to Tyrese Maxey. His decision making wasn't a problem last night. His effort, his energy was, and the energy is directly correlated to the fact that they can't survive 4 minutes without him. It's wild. It's wild.
The OG part, when you think about what he did on Sunday because of his point production, with where he scored 16 points, grabbed 14 rebounds, the defense and all of that was there through the first three games. The point production was not there. You were living with the stuff that he was taking. Yesterday, he stepped up in a big way. Before, it was DiVincenzo and Hart that were really giving point production in those first couple of games to help them win. And Miles McBride to a certain extent. And even Bogdanovich coming in and doing some things. OG Anunoby, though, stepped up where you had your questions. You had your questions going in. Is he going to be a positive offensively in doing that? His role may be just defense for this team in this particular series. Maybe that he will build off of something if they were to advance. But he stepped up when Josh Hart went 0 for 7, who has been one of the stars for the Knicks offensively because of his three-point shooting, and it did not translate to this game for Josh Hart on Sunday. But Anunoby, as the guys mentioned, being that pickup, we discussed it at the time, not only because of should the Sixers look into it for the OG Anunoby piece, the fit there still with Nick Nurse, will that work out? But once the trade was actually done, he was the first one off the board being moved from the Toronto Raptors to the New York Knicks. And we also talked about how this is a team that's already good, that is now adding the piece that you might have wanted for a postseason run. Could that come back and bite you? Now, while we did predict that the Sixers would win the series, not over, but not looking good right now, he is still a piece of that. He is still a part of that. And in yesterday's game, he was a major factor in why they did not win. Three block shots, the defense that he played 1 through 5, throwing Tyrese Maxey off in certain ways where he could not get his going. The shots that he made, mid-range jumpers, driving to the basket, dunking, and hitting three-pointers as well, not yesterday, but just seeing that, hey, he's taking those shots. At some point, it may fall. He was a difference. And when you then go again and look at Josh Hart not producing offensively, what does he do? He still gets you three block shots, blocking Nick Batum at the rim, making him fall on his back, where that was a highlight reel defensive-type play. leading all rebounders with 17 boards, and still having an impact while not scoring a single bucket from the field. You don't have that on your basketball team right now. And that goes to what Kyle pointed out in the very beginning of the roster construction. And you better be right at the trade deadline when your guy that you do trade for is a DNP CD because he cannot hit a shot. The one who is more impactful is the player that you traded for from Milwaukee, where people were ticked off because you traded the other guy, Patrick Beverley, who might also be eliminated in his next game. So that's where all of the roster piece comes in, and the blaming of Joel Embiid comes into play here again. And you also look at the Maxey part, where we have given him his praise, and rightfully so, because of how good he has been scoring the basketball. And I didn't understand why he wasn't more of an impactful offensive player against the Knicks in the non-Embiid minutes. And certainly in the fourth quarter, when you saw that Embiid had worn down. In the pass that Derek is talking about, where Maxey was wide open for that three-pointer, where Embiid found him perfectly on the catch, rise up and shoot it. Maxey mentioned it afterward that he had to make that shot. And he did not. And that's why they are down 3-1 right now, because the others did not uplift and give more energy, more effort in those minutes that Embiid was not there. And when he was fatigued, that they did not step up and close it out for him. Kyle and I were talking about it before the show when Derek had walked away for a moment, that the others, when Jalen Brunson, and we've talked about it a bunch, so we've all said it, when Jalen Brunson wasn't great in those first two games, his teammates, they lifted their level of play to help them steal those two games in New York, where it was up in the air, it was a toss-up. Right now, the Sixers aren't doing that. Embiid won game three with his 50. Maxey was fantastic. Oubre chipped in 15. Others needed to do something in game four to even the series at 2-2 and make it a three-game series. That's why they are not in the place that they are right now at 2-2, getting ready for game five and make it a three-game series.
Also, Devon, I want to highlight Spencer Cotman as a comment says, wasn't the lack of interest in OG also in part the future contract? Are we not worrying about that now? Of course, we would be talking plenty about that. We'd be judging based on how he was playing here, the same people, same way people in New York are judging based on how things have gone there, which, by the way, the Knicks, I believe, are now 23-3 or 23-4, yeah, something like that, since with OG and, yeah, Brunson in the lineup together. And that's with injuries to Mitchell Robinson, with injuries to Julius Randle, with injuries to other guys in that rotation. So clearly they're feeling pretty good about that right now. The point is not they absolutely should have traded for OG specifically and signed OG to whatever he wants in the summer. The point is they opted for this path and have put all the pressure on their future. And in the interim, they entered the playoffs as a 7 seed and did not have, they have no real plan right now other than Joel and Tyrese carry us to victory. Because if they can't do it, you are going to lose. And that is not where they should be after all these years of Embiid, right? Like, I'm not saying that they should have the absolute perfect supporting cast. Like, the last few years have been topsy-turvy for a million different reasons. You should have at least some kind of functional identity. This is not a player for whom injuries are this, like, mysterious, oh my God, we can't plan for this. That's been the norm. And so you have to build a basketball team that is going to be functional and productive without him. They have not come close. The only time they had was last season when James Harden was here, and James Harden was a star who could pick up the weight that Joel left behind when he was hurt. And so that's what I'm getting into. And the other part of it is Joel's knee is not going to get better moving forward. Once your meniscus begins to degrade, you don't just like grow the meniscus back and, hey, I have the extra padding back, I'm going to feel better. He is going to deal with problems the rest of his career. So punting a year while he is in the process of going through this injury recovery that will more than likely impact him the rest of his life, to say nothing of the rest of his basketball career, that's a massive, massive gamble that everything is going to break right for you. And that's going to be, in some people's minds, justification to say, I'm tired of this guy. I don't want to deal with Joel Embiid on my favorite basketball team. Trade him for what you can get. Trade him and build around Maxey, like whatever that conversation ends up being. But if you're not trading him, if he is your franchise player, and he is for Philadelphia, I don't think you can just sit around and be like, well, you know, he's averaging Wilt-like numbers in the regular season, we're going to sit on our hands. You better fucking nail, and I mean nail, this offseason, or you have made a massive mistake in how this year was handled.
All right. I think I have some thoughts there that I will follow up on. Before that, we do have to pay some bills. We've heard from a number of people recently who joined Trumark Financial Credit Union right here in Philly, and it's been an eye-opening experience to see the difference between banking at a bank compared to becoming a member of a credit union. When you join a credit union like Trumark Financial, you become part owner, which means profits come back to you instead of going to shareholders. Trumark Financial has better rates, lower fees, a better return on savings, and more flexible options overall, and of course the same digital tools and technology we all want. But the best part is Trumark's financial is local. They're headquartered in Fort Washington, and with 24 branches across the Philly area, they are deeply rooted in our community. They serve our community and only our community, so their investments and programs help our people right here at home. Becoming a member of a credit union has so many benefits over being a customer at a bank. It's a total no-brainer. Head over to Truemark.com/PHLY to learn more or to find a branch near you. That's Truemark.com/PHLY. Federally insured by the NCUA.
I always talk about the one in Upper Darby, Truemark. Go check it out. Nice little location there. Go save your money. Maybe you have to get some playoff tickets. I don't know. Who knows? Baseball tickets. We'll see. This episode is also brought to you by our good friends from Manscaped. Did you know one man every hour, every day is diagnosed with testicular cancer? In fact, testicular cancer is the most common form of cancer amongst men aged 15 to 35. And with April being National Testicular Cancer Awareness Month, our friends over at Manscaped have partnered with Testicular Cancer Society to help spread awareness for men's health and early cancer detection. Visit manscaped.com/TCS to learn more of how to check yourself for early signs of cancer. And as always, you can use promo code PHLY for 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com. We only have a few days left in the month, but it shouldn't stop you thereafter. Of course, making sure that you look out for yourself and have to maybe dealing with some loved ones that have dealt with cancer in the past. We all know that cancer sucks. So you want to make sure with this in mind, you can perform simple routine self-checks at home while enjoying Manscaped products that you can use every day, like the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra that I have. It makes sense, right? We use products daily to trim and maintain our boys down there. The Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra features two interchangeable skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little bit off the top, new foil blade heads for the smooth and sleek look. As well, the LED lights make it very, very helpful for the visibility so you don't make any mistakes, and it's hassle-free. You can bring this trimmer wherever you go, thanks to its wireless charging capabilities and travel lock feature. They also give you a pretty cool bag that you can put all of the pieces of the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra into the bag and make the carrying pretty easy. In addition to providing the right tools and solutions for a comfortable and easy grooming, Manscaped is committed to raising awareness and giving support for fighters, survivors, and families impacted by testicular cancer. That is why they will be donating $50,000 to the Testicular Cancer Society. Help save lives and balls by going over to manscaped.com/TCS and sharing their funny, educational, check yourself video. And while you're at it, grab 20% off plus free shipping with code PHLY, because let's see if Kyle remembers this since he's been away for a while. Like a famous American philosopher once said,
take care of your balls,
your mentals,
and your chickens.
We appreciate it.
I want to point something out. I love our friends at Manscaped, and thank you to them for our, what is it, the Lawnmower 5.0, I believe.
Yes, they sent Ultra,
all of us.
The Ultra.
The one thing I always get a kick out of, the mental imagery. I love having the LED light on the lawnmower. Are there a lot of people that are using theirs in the dark?
That is not something I would be doing.
The thought comes into my mind, like, there has to be a market reason for this, that there have been enough lawnmower related accidents in
here's my theory,
that the good people at Manscaped are like, you know what, we got to help these bozos out, give them an LED yes. light and save some accidents.
They've made some mistakes, I'm sure, out there in the past when trying to groom. But you know, when you get closer to an item or a piece of your skin or something.
For sure.
The shadow looms there. So isn't maybe the LED lighting, Derek, don't the shadow, you know, may get in the way and kind of throw you off a little bit of where you're actually trimming. Yeah.
And that I get. I just, it always pops in my mind. Like, I'm just picturing I won't say one of us, but somebody in their bathroom at home, just like, oh, I'm gonna in the dark, just go to town,
go to town. Don't send us any videos. We're good.
Please do not
go watch the check yourself video to make sure you're doing things the right way.
Going back to basketball, that ball.
Check your chickens, mentals, and your balls,
which is really doing a number on our mentals.
The mentals.
Really, this should have been a BetterHelp sponsored episode. Anyway.
I do
give Daryl a little bit of leeway, because I'm not saying he's wrong yet. And I'm not like, yes, you could waste this run. And I think if you go back and listen, like when they acquired Kyle Lowry and we talked about should he be a starter, our answer was pretty much like, hell no. If he's starting, you're screwed. Not because he's not a worthwhile addition, but because he's too old to be counted on for those many minutes. You can go back to a lot of our discourse on Kelly Oubre at various points where it said, if he's starting, then you have problems. So I don't really blame, like, I don't think what's going on here is necessarily all that surprising.
This is where the healthy Melton part comes into play.
Healthy Melton, yes. healthy, even Covington, not that he would be starting here, at least be a piece that you could throw in there.
Yeah.
But that's a big part of what's driving this Embiid conversation is, yeah, he's putting up great numbers and they're not winning. And our discourse around, oh, well, if you're relying on these people that much, you're probably not going to win anyway, factors into that. But the inverse of sort of what Daryl did at the deadline is Phoenix and going all in on an imperfect third option that can not only derail the rest of this season of Joel Embiid's prime, but derail multiple seasons of Joel Embiid's prime if you get that wrong. He's making it a gamble that whoever becomes available in the summer, whether that's free agency or a trade, and I've said pretty consistently I think the trade is a bigger part of that, is going to be better than the opportunities he had over the last couple of months. And he'll make the comment, oh, Buddy Hield was the best player available at the deadline. If you're talking about maybe that specific day, sure. Unfortunately, OG and Pascal, who are going to be playing probably in the second round here, were available earlier in the season as well that they decided against. He's making a bet that whoever becomes available is better for the long term than those two. In doing so, you hampered your ability to compete for title this year. That was further then diminished by the injuries to Melton and Covington. He could end up being right, but we are certainly seeing the limitations. Look, it turns out, as good as Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey are, and they're very, very good, they're averaging a combined 69 points per game throughout this season. Set you up for that one. They've been incredible. That two-man game has been, you know, better than I think any of us expected coming into this season. But it's hard to build a championship-caliber team around buyout guys, minimum contracts, and salary filler in trades. It's just hard to do. And that's why the discourse around Joel Embiid, when they finally do, you know, when he finally is human for a quarter and nobody else is there to pick him up, like I said, Jalen Brunson could shoot 29% from the field over the course of two games, and they win both of those games. Joel Embiid has nowhere near that luxury, and that doesn't diminish Jalen Brunson at all. He's in the running for MVP and all NBA. Embiid just doesn't have that kind of luxury.
The good news is none of us on this show advocated for the Bradley Beal trade.
No, we were hard on that.
I will sit here and say, yeah, maybe they should have taken some bigger swings at, let's say, high-end role players, like sub-star types.
I'll even ask you one that's playing right now in this series. Dante DiVincenzo got 4 years, $46 million last summer. Now, that was coming off of a one-year Golden State, but you know what type of player he is. Maybe the situation was bad. Plus, he was coming off the injury before in Milwaukee, where he was then traded to Sacramento. That is not Sacramento for what it is right now.
And I do think that his profile now is not what his profile was prior to the season, where I think he changed how he played and became one of the most willing three-point shooters in the league, where if he was here, you needed that from day one, basically, and they would not have gotten that. It was a process over the course of the season. It really, I believe it was from about January 1st on that Dante really stepped into that role of high-volume three-point shooter. And that's not to say he wouldn't have brought some sort of value prior to that. But I think from a Sixers perspective, as they're assessing free agents and whatnot, like, that's a real consideration. Like, to give that type of player that type of money, they got to come in and be a shooter day one, not, like, figure it out eventually. But look, I've given the Knicks credit throughout the series, and I think they deserve it, right? Like, so much of our discussion becomes, well, why didn't Daryl do this? Why can't Joel do this? Why didn't Tyrese lock in on whatever it is? You do have to give New York credit too for what they have built with the roster, 100%. For what Tibbs has done to, you know, help some guys along on the coaching side. Brunson, for his development since signing that deal, I think there were people who believed it was an overpay when they signed him, or at least were questionable on it, and he is now one of the best value contracts in the league for the next couple of seasons. They have proven that their identity travels into the playoffs, and that's honestly been one of the big concerns for Tom Thibodeau teams in the past, right? Like, his teams have generally always played like this, or in a manner similar to this. And so part of the reason he ended up in New York after couple other jobs he flamed out was because, all right, the Knicks are trying to get back to a level of respectability And they don't have to so much worry about, does it travel to the playoffs? Because they just want to make the playoffs. They want to be in the mix and competing. Well, now they're definitely in the mix. And now, right now, where we sit today, they look like they're on the verge of pretty, frankly, easy path to a conference final series if they can finish out this series against the Sixers. So as much as the Sixers have to, you know, lick their wounds and say, what did we do wrong here? The Knicks got a lot of stuff right, and they deserve their end of the, or their portion of the credit for how this series has gone.
All right. We do have a couple of super chats. We have a lot to get into, but a couple of super chats. Let's jump into Coach Lowell Ricketts here, who joins in on the show as always. And Coach says 11th playoff game L, while Joel's plus minus was a plus, including all three L's versus New York. Joel's prime has been wasted by team being handcuffed by a wasted max contract. I assume we're talking about how Rich put it in his great job of using crumble with the L as he crumbled.
Crumble man, as crumble so many people man. Have referred to him in this chat.
In his daily newsletter. That's a big piece of it, because we did touch briefly on it before the show. I mean, how many more times can we mention Tobias Harris?
I'm going to have to just keep talking today, because Derek is just coughing his brains out.
Well, I mean, how many more times do we mention it where
Joel's
plus minus and all of that, the guy's a net negative, and he's in your starting lineup playing 30 plus minutes.
Yeah, I think I looked it up. Coming into game three, he was a plus like 308 in 56 games, and the Sixers had a 500 record in those games. Like, if you are a plus 300, that's basically like a plus 8 per game, and the Sixers still found a way to lose half of those games. That should never happen. Like, his plus minus should theoretically be right around even if they're a 500 team. They have, for the entirety of his career, been beating teams when he is on the floor and being outscored miserably when he is on the bench, and they have never been able to fix it. And it's infuriating. A lot of it comes down to the misallocation of resources to Tobias Harris. There's no way to get around that. There's just, and we mentioned it before, for a couple of years there, you had $70 million tied to two players who did nothing in the half court.
He was 4 for 10 on Sunday for 10 points. He did have 8 rebounds, but it gets lost because you needed more.
Yeah,
there were a lot of offensive rebounds on the other side where he was on the floor and needed to attack that glass to prevent that from happening.
And again, I'm not trying to turn this into the blame Daryl Morey show, but there's been for years, it's just been like, well, Elton Brand signed into that contract, whatever. Daryl Morey's been on the job since 2020. It's 2024. Maybe you wouldn't have gotten the value you wanted. There were definitely times when you would have had to probably attach stuff to Tobias to get rid of him. You cannot honestly sit here and tell me that there was not a single opportunity to move him and try to build the roster in a different way. They played out the whole contract. We sat through a half decade of Tobias Harris, and on some level, that was by choice from the front office on down. And so Tobias deserves his end of the blame or the criticism, right? He has not been good, but this is the same guy, albeit I think a worse guy than we've seen. But mostly the same type of player that he has been for the duration of the contract. Unfortunately, the Sixers got maybe the worst contract year performances in the history of contract years,
goodness, right?
Well,
but that's also it, too. Like, in prior years, when Tobias had 2 or even 3 years left on his deal, the cost to get off of that contract would have been too high. You would have had that attached multiple first-round picks, taking yourself out of any kind of free or off-season star-hunting possibility. The only real question was this, I think, the past year, past 12 months, and really at the trade deadline. And as we're seeing now, it's not like Bogey and Burks are exactly lighting the world on fire for New York. That's not the reason New York's winning this series. So I'm not sure what kind of market was out there, and I certainly didn't want to attach multiple first-round draft picks to get off Tobias 2 years ago. So I do think, again, it probably wouldn't have made that big of a difference. We would just all be a little less frustrated by watching the team.
And you look, and of course, going in, it was always, he's the third guy. He's always the third guy. He's the third guy. He's the third guy.
He was substantially better in prior years. He was always frustrating, never worth the contract. But this is a new
this low. Is, yeah, he's horrendous.
Yeah, it's almost like, all right, he's just ready to go. He knows he's gone. We all know he's gone. Just rip the Band-Aid off and go. But my man, you are still playing in a series that you can contribute and win. And that leads me to this before we get to our next thing. Edwin Robinson, coach, great coach in the area. high school level AAU and all that, says, who's our third option on this team? The third option changes night to night. And with it, Nick Nurse also, when speaking about the OG piece or even Pascal Siakam, wanted none of the previous players from Toronto.
Well, I certainly think there's some truth to that with Siakam.
With
I'm
Siakam,
not sure about
for
OG.
Sure.
Yeah, I think OG, there could have been a reunion.
For sure.
And he also says, by the way, get our Marcus Morris moment of the day.
Well, Buddy Hield. We had some fun with Marcus Morris while he was here.
Exactly.
I would not have predicted that.
That they miss him.
That Marcus Morris would have been preferable to have on the roster to Buddy Hield. Although, you know, hindsight being 2020, you'd say, all right, he's a vet who's been in a ton of playoff wars, all that. Buddy's never played in the playoffs. You can rationalize it. I still think that's I would still make the move based on what we knew at the time. But now that I'm watching Buddy in the playoffs, it's like.
And a big part of our conversation yesterday was lack of the toughness.
Yeah.
It is clearly shown in this.
Maybe Marcus Morris would just fight somebody.
Exactly.
You know?
The one thing you'll say is the toughness, you won't be questioning that part when it comes to him.
I mean,
in the lineup.
Marcus Morris has 9 points on 10 shots in 14 playoff minutes.
That's
Let's
all
just
right.
calm down a little bit here. He didn't play a lick of defense the entire time he was here. Buddy
Marcus Morris moment of the
This
the
conversation
day.
Is about Marcus. It's that Buddy has sucked.
Yes.
Badly. Badly.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
You know who doesn't suck?
Who does not?
Our friends at Game Time, right?
Yeah, is that my cue? Hold on. Give me 1 second. I was too busy ranting about Marcus. You got me worked up about Marcus.
You bought a playoff ticket?
Give me 1 second.
Game six, baby.
Who knows? Could be game six. Hey, it wouldn't
Man's
be the,
never heard of having a
tab
open,
New York.
Apparently.
Hey, go to Game Time. Go take over New York,
It
Sixer
would be
fans.
The most Sixers thing ever to win game five and then come back and don't even need to speak that one into existence. But if you want to go see that, Game Time is the place to go. Buying tickets to your favorite events shouldn't be stressful. Game Time is a fast and easy way to buy tickets for all sports, music, comedy, and theater near you. With killer deals on last-minute tickets and their best price guarantee, you can stop stressing over the tickets and start getting hyped for the disaster at the arena. Game Time is the place for last-minute ticket deals. Forget planning months in advance. Game Time has deals on tickets right up to the day of the event. And the Game Time guarantee means you'll always get the best price. You find tickets in the same section and row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. It's fastest growing ticketing app in the country for a reason. With Game Time, you get images of your seat before you buy, so you know exactly what to expect when you arrive. And you can buy tickets in a matter of seconds, 2 taps and you're set, with tickets sent directly to your phone so you never have to dig through your email. Snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Phillies tickets. There's Phillies too. It's not just about the Sixers.
They're pretty good.
You're going to want to go see some.
They've been very good. Yeah, they just had a West Coast sweep.
Make sure those Mets fans don't come over and take over the bank too.
Alec Boehm is now Mike Schmidt.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
Without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PHLY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PHLY for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
Well, TN in the chat is worried about whether the Sixers are going to come out flat in game five. You know who never comes out flat? Soda from our friends at Olipop. You can see the beautiful Olipop fridge behind my shoulder there. Olipop's a new kind of soda with only 2 to 5 grams of sugar and 9 grams of fiber per can. Olipop's available online and available in almost 30,000 retailers nationwide. Including the most recent launch at all Wawa stores, where you can scoop a classic root beer or a strawberry vanilla at a Wawa near you guys. Guys, the best testament I can give to Olipop, we were sent approximately 15 flavors. I don't even know if they have 15 flavors in existence. Our fridge was absolutely loaded, the bigger fridge out there. And I'm pretty sure all that is left is that tiny little fridge for display purposes, because we have drank all of them. It is tasty.
Gene's got the root beer.
It is better for you than conventional soda, so you don't have to worry as much about your teeth, your gut, your overall health. No added sugar. The 2 to 5 grams of sugar come from natural sources. Their vintage cola has just 2 grams of sugar compared to a regular Coca-Cola, which has 39 grams of sugar. That is a massive, massive difference. They have so many flavors, classic flavors that you've been familiar with growing up, if you're really old, going to a place where you're drinking a classic soda, but they have vintage cola, classic root beer, orange squeeze, classic grape, strawberry vanilla, cream soda, cherry cola. I've also had a watermelon. I've had
the watermelon lime.
The watermelon lime was delicious. Yes. They have lemon lime. The new stuff is coming out all the time. If you want some, if you want to give Olipop a try, use the code PHLY20 for 20% off of your next Olipop order. Discount only applies to one-time orders and not to subscription orders. Olipop is sold online at drinkolipop.com as well as Amazon, and it's available in almost 30,000 retailers nationwide, including Wawa, Target, Sprouts, Wegmans, ShopRite, and GoPuff.
You got to read the one Jay says. Ollie. Let me see what kind of flavors we have.
Ollie effing pop. That's what I'm talking about. Jay said
Tropical
we really
punch.
Really put him on.
Cherry vanilla.
Look at that. X-Man also says he's seen Olipop in Giant Supermarket. Jay says, y'all really put me on. I love it. Yes. With the fire emojis.
Winona,
come
can you
on,
mix
man.
It?
Winona. Yeah.
I actually have not tried mixing it. I would assume, you know, it's...
if you haven't flavors. Tried last night, then what are you waiting for?
Oh, man.
Derek, we love Olipop around here.
Yes. And by the way, our watch-along tomorrow that we're going to have. Yes, watch-along for Game 5. You better not lose, Sixers, because we'll be live. And live. We're doing a live effort.
Crying into Olipops
oh,
if they
goodness.
Lose.
And it's presented by Olipop tomorrow, so make sure you're checking us out for the watch-along. Derek, what happened in the fourth quarter? They only lost the fourth quarter in terms of points by 20-16, but they only scored 16 points in the fourth quarter. What happened?
Well, they couldn't rebound or shoot or dribble.
And their best player got double and triple teamed on basically every possession.
And didn't have enough energy to move.
And their second best player missed wide open threes and missed layups.
What, they shoot like 1-for-9 from three as a team, I think, something like that.
1-for-9. New York was 1-for-8, but they
no. The shame of it is, I thought they defended pretty gosh darn well there. And when you start factoring in defense rebounding in there, obviously,
as I say, the only way I push back is rebounding is part of defense.
But I thought, in terms of their effort defensively, their communication, I thought they were pretty locked in. They certainly made enough first shot stops to win that game. I thought Joel Embiid made some pretty good passes, but they couldn't shoot. And there was so much, you know. Obviously, Embiid drives a lot of what they do, and he in the middle of the court drives a lot of what they're able to do, both in terms of as a team and also Tyrese Maxey. And I thought with him not having the energy to really go at it, there was just a lot of indecision and a lot of passing and a lot of uncertainty. And you needed Tyrese to step up, and he didn't have it in him. And Kyle and I were sitting there the whole time. He got the one breakaway layup, and he got another layup a couple of minutes later, a couple of possessions later. And you thought maybe that would be enough to get him going, and he just didn't have it. And Tyrese has been incredible through the first three games. So an off night, like, it goes back to what we were talking about. You shouldn't have to be scoring 35 per night for your team to have a chance. You should have enough people to pick up the slack. They haven't at any point in this series. And so when Tyrese does finally struggle down a stretch, when Joel Embiid has nothing because he's played 32 straight minutes, we focus a little too much on that. But Tyrese wasn't good enough last night. And that's fine because he did enough to win you all three of the first games, but he didn't have enough last night.
I would say the easiest way to tell it was not his night and he was not locked in. Go rewatch the sequence where Kyle Lowry intentionally misses the free throw in the final minute, makes the first, and there's a clear communication from the bench to Lowry, like, try to miss this one. Misses it intentionally. It's tipped out, and Maxey is like taken aback that the ball is coming out to the perimeter being tipped back.
He's taking steps back, by the way.
Is not at all prepared for the fact that they did exactly what was communicated to the guy at the free throw line to do.
And it was perfectly missed, too. Perfect.
Could not have asked for better execution on that. It's way tougher than I think people probably realize to miss a free throw in a way that's actually conducive to getting the rebound for your team. And Lowry did it perfectly. You get the tip out, and Maxey is in his own private Idaho. And I don't know what is going on there. He's clearly at the end of a tough, bad game for him. Subpar by his standards, certainly subpar by his standards in this series alone. But that's one where if any other guy on the team had done that, they're getting absolutely destroyed today. And I'm not sitting here telling you we need to pile on Tyrese for a bad game. He's a young player. He's going to grow from this. But he has said, as have all the other guys on the team, every possession matters. You have to value the basketball. You have to be locked in every single second of the game. And that, in that, that moment, that is a snapshot of what went wrong for this team in that game. I would also say, and I've said this, I said this on Anthony's show this morning. I've talked about this a good bit at this point. The part I was most disappointed in with Joel was not the fourth quarter, was not the lack of energy down the stretch, was not that they had to save his legs on some possessions and stick him in the corner. It's when you're up double digits in the third quarter and you have the ability to turn it into a 15, maybe as much as 20 point lead, and he's just throwing the ball away, turning the ball over, miscommunication with Maxey, two bad passes to Oubre that end up as turnovers. Those are the moments you need to seize, because if you're able to pad out that lead in the third quarter, if you stop Brunson from turning this game into a one-point game going into the fourth quarter, we don't need to have the debate about, is Joel going to play to open the fourth quarter? You go with your normal rotations. Joel gets his 3 to 4 minutes on the bench. You bring him back in. You get a strong final eight from Joel. And so in some ways, he is accountable for the fact that they had to use him that long because he didn't show the killer instinct he needed in the third quarter. And that's what I think people have gotten wrong about this game. I think he left everything he had out there on the fourth quarter. And I think even in the state he was in, the Knicks sold out to stop him, to put bodies on him, to double him. They doubled one pass away off of Tyrese Maxey, who is by far the second most dangerous player on the team after Joel. And they couldn't punish that. And that's to the disservice of how they played it. The third quarter is where I thought Joel really let this game get away. And that's where I came away the most disappointed with him.
They were up by 10 twice in this game, and one of which were in the third quarter where, to your point, you thought that the opportunities that they had, the three consecutive turnovers in that spot. Sure, after one, DiVincenzo hits a three to cut it to seven, but you had, again, another opportunity, another opportunity, another opportunity, and it was just bad turnovers in that spot. In the fourth quarter, as we talked about, both the Knicks and the Sixers made six field goals. So they both shot 20%, just under 30% in the frame. The Knicks' points, though, 20 of which came off of second chance points, 11 of them, 7 offensive rebounds to the Sixers' 4, and they still only had 2 second chance points. So the thing that has been killing the Sixers this entire series came to bite them in the you-know-what again in that fourth quarter where there were not a lot of scoring from either
team. I'm concerned Derek is going to die on the set today.
But I'm definitely weakening as the show goes on.
and that is
a
big
stretch,
part of
just
that.
Like Joel Embiid.
Maxey, 2 for 8, playing the 12, full 12 minutes, but not able to give them anything offensively when that 2 for 8, that one missed big three-pointer. And I told Kyle this too, the three layups that they missed in the fourth quarter were really bad. Maxey missed a layup at the rim. It rolled off the lip of the rim. The Batum block from Josh Hart, that was right there again at the rim. I don't know that he takes the floater, the little short jumper to avoid that. And with he's hit with the pass, but that's another missed opportunity. And then there was also the Harris one that we talked about that was really bad because his looked like the easiest one to make and he just flat out blew it. So that is that fourth quarter for the Sixers. We'll get to the preview in just a second of game 5. Where the guys will be back in New York in Madison Square Garden for game 5. See if they can push it to 6. Let's get back to the Super Chats here. Bree, what do we have? We have Mark Jackson checking in. Is there a possibility Joel requests a trade after hearing his comments after the game last night in regards to the Knicks fans taking over?
So I was
going
to say, I'm
Sixers
assuming
fans.
Mark is referring to the fans stuff.
Yeah.
How deep do we want to get into this?
Well, first of all, to see the video of the Knicks fans in the concourse of the center chanting FNB the way that they did and taking it over and then saying, let's go outside and put a jersey on Wilt, by the way, a Knicks jersey outside on Wilt.
Yeah.
I mean, never did I expect.
So
it's been bad, but I've never seen it get to that point.
What I'll say is there a possibility? That's always been a possibility that has been concerning just because of how impactful it would be and because of the history of the NBA. I don't get any indication that it's any higher of a chance than it ever has been. I've always said that Joel Embiid has never given me, or I think pretty much anyone covering a team, any indication that he is on any sort of a last draw. Do I think those comments after the game were an indication? No, I think he was just frustrated that he was getting booed in his home court. And sometimes Joel Embiid's a little too honest and open about stuff like that and leaves himself open to criticism and speculation. This is certainly, like, if we're going on the DEFCON level, what he said over the summer was more concerning, and that ended up not mattering. I think Joel Embiid sometimes just says stuff and he's frustrated and it's in the moment. No, I have no indication that he would be on anywhere near of a, last draw.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Derek, and I will make my quick points about this whole quote unquote controversy. I don't have any issue with Sixers fans being skeptical of the team and not paying as much money as Knicks fans were willing to pay to come see a team that they're excited about. There's no reason to shame them. I don't think Joel was shaming them either. Also, if I step into Joel's shoes, playing on a knee that is clearly not right, playing with a paralyzed face, being at home, and having people yell "fuck Embiid" while he's at the free throw line or playing, he's gonna feel some type of way, and I think that's mostly justified. Should he have said what he did? Maybe not. Should he have just said, "We have to be better. I can't worry about that stuff"? Maybe. Part of the joy of following Joel's career is that he just says what he feels, and he was honest about it. I don't think it was an attack. I don't think he was blaming the fans.
Right.
I just think he said it sucked that it happened, and that's about it. It does not require much more thought or debate than that.
I saw so many people respond, "Well, why are you blaming the fans?" He's not. He's just voicing some frustration.
He got asked a direct question and said, "Well, it kind of sucked."
You want your athletes to show who they are and to show emotion. And that sometimes is going to piss you off. That doesn't mean we have to flip out every time it happens, though. Like, I think Kyle summed it up pretty perfectly. Fans have a right to be frustrated at the way he played.
Yeah.
He has a right to be frustrated. There are so many New York fans in the building. Neither one of them have to be a huge deal. They're just temporary.
I didn't hear that chant while we were at Wicked Wolf because we couldn't really hear. How loud was that chant specifically?
I don't know about that chant specifically, but Knicks fans were loud throughout the course of the
game. Knicks fans were louder the whole game. I don't know what the percentage of Sixers fans were.
Yeah, if I had to guess, I'd say the building was 35% Knicks fans, but it probably sounded 50-50 at times even greater than that.
But that's like what
that.
You said for game three. They were loud, but they just, they didn't drown out everyone else.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
All right. Well, see what he does next. Cannoli next in the super chat. Any chance
what
we
up,
see
Cannoli?
KJ or Ricky on Tuesday, both inexperienced but hustling, can rebound, or even Paul Reed with Joel. Or Nick Nurse just sticks to the same lineup?
I think it's unlikely this deep in a series that you're just going to dust somebody off. I do think that they are a desperate team right now. And frankly, given how Melton looked, which we haven't really talked about him at all, Melton was completely off the pace in his minutes yesterday. And if you're saying, all right, D'Anthony can get some minutes in that spot, Derek, you might want to just walk off the set at this point.
I was trying to do that while you were on the solo cam. Thanks for calling me out, though.
Given that Melton looks like that and Nurse is saying, okay, I would like to get some defense, some athleticism. D'Anthony offers more shooting than those other guys. But you can make the case that, all right, if he's trying to find a role for D'Anthony, maybe he could just try to find a few minutes here or there for KJ or Ricky.
Right.
I do think it is tough this deep into a series to just, dust the guy off. And that's part of Nick's hesitation with reintroducing D'Anthony in the first place. It's like, how do you ask a guy, special circumstances compared to the other guys, right? He hasn't really played in months. How do you ask that guy to jump into this physical, rugged, defensive rock fight of a series? But I don't know. I kind of lean toward at this point with with Ricky specifically, it's like you don't know what you don't know. Throw him out there.
That's
if he stinks
the
for a couple
what do you
minutes,
have to lose?
You don't have anything to lose because you've been getting your doors blown off.
He's either
going to
throw his body
anyway
all over the place, and it's going to be a negative or it's going to be a positive. It's one of the two if he's out there on the floor. And the one thing that we've said about Nick Nurse in Toronto is he's willing to try things. For whatever reason with those two, he was not willing to try with those two yet through four games. I mean, he's desperate. Maybe he does it now, but he hasn't done it yet. Also, Gene Ross says, Devon, can we open the fridge behind you for Derek? Get him an Olipop.
Because I see a tropical punch in there, which I did not get to have one
I
of those before they were all.
Yeah.
I had not had one of those before they were gone. So if you come into the studio one day and there's no more tropical punch Olipop, it's because I bit the bullet and took it.
All right. This is the best handle here on our show.
I don't know if we can repeat that, though.
Well, we did it before. Money Mar P's sitting down. Says, Philadelphia wins in seven or Money Mar will eat a shoe.
I'm okay with that.
All right. I'm sure you are. You don't have to eat a shoe. You escaped your shoe bet.
All right.
You mean I had a correct prediction?
I guess so.
All right, Kyle, preview game five. You're going to be back on the road. We'll talk to you after the game, of course. Post game, your thoughts again going into this one for game five. 3-1, elimination.
Again, maybe this seems delusional, but given that the Knicks' differential in this series is +4 over four games, they absolutely could go and win this game. Sure. And I would not be shocked to see them push it to seven. I think the...
You would not.
Where you would push back is to say they're down 3-1 for a reason. The Knicks continue to win on the margins. They have so far imposed their identity more than the Sixers have outside of game three anyway. So it's a gut check game.
Why did they win game three, Kyle? Can you remind me?
Joel Embiid scored 50 points.
Oh, so they are better with him on the floor. Yeah.
Huh. It's interesting. You know.
Would you change his minutes in game five?
To where you're, sure as hell wouldn't
I'm not
play
playing
him 44.
Him the whole
to where you're not in the position where you do have to. It was a close game. So
no, well,
you,
I think Kyle's point was 100%
fix
correct.
The minutes of how you divvy them up.
I think they lost that game, and I think Nick panicked after they didn't extend the lead in third. I don't think changing the minutes is necessarily going to fix it. I think Nick has to have some resolve. Because I do think even if they come out and he sits for 3 minutes and the Sixers get outscored by 4 or 6 points, I think that's a better outcome than not having Joel Embiid be Joel Embiid for the final eight. So I don't necessarily think it's about changing the minutes. The change I would make, I want Kyle Lowry on the floor every minute that Joel Embiid is not. I think they tried to get Tyrese Maxey off ball at times, and they were having Kelly Oubre bring the ball up and Tobias Harris bring the ball up, and I want to see none of that. Put another legitimate ball handler, another legitimate
like
creator. Fucking put Ricky out there. I don't care. Just don't have Kelly Oubre bring the ball up so you can run Tyrese Maxey off ball. I think they need to change the stagger so that Kyle Lowry is playing alongside Tyrese Maxey when Joel Embiid is on the bench. That's the one big change I would make. But in terms of minutes, I think even if you're in a position where you don't think you can get Joel Embiid 4 minutes of rest, I think you have to get Joel Embiid 4 minutes of rest. I think you have to be committed to that.
Our overlords are telling me I need to drink the tropical punch right now.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to do
quickly,
so.
Quickly, though, I'll ask you this because of the fact that maybe Mitchell Robinson plays, maybe he doesn't if it's Preston Saccua, which we were surprised, Rich and I, at the moment. How are they not winning these minutes when he's out there? Do you change up the backup minutes because he did not want to put Paul Reed in there? I don't know what the answer is. Is it going small with Nick Batum and Tobias Harris? I don't know.
I don't think it's that he didn't want to put Paul Reed out there, although Paul Reed wasn't good yesterday. I think Paul Reed was, you know, this was the one game in the series where he was pretty bad, I thought. And they do definitely attack the rim more with Paul Reed in there, but that's like they're going to attack the rim more if Nick Batum is playing small ball center too. You're not going to fix that. The only way to fix that is by playing Joel Embiid the whole 48, and we just saw that doesn't really work. I don't think it was so much that he didn't want to put Paul Reed out there. I think it was more that he didn't want to take Joel Embiid off the floor, which goes back to the big
problem.
That's
a good tropical punch, by the way.
There you go. You have to find a way, like, you have to, you're not going to put a good defensive lineup out there. And part of that is because the Sixers outside of Embiid just don't have any rebounders that you can count on. So you have to be able to score the basketball. I think putting Lowry on there with Maxey is the only realistic option they have to really change that calculus. It's not, I was joking that maybe you just run a 24-second violation every time down and have Tyrese Maxey throw up a prayer. Just limit the amount of possessions you have so that even if you're losing by 0.9 points per possession. There just aren't that many in that 4 minute span. That's a ridiculous suggestion. Don't get me wrong. That's Vivek Ranadive level of stupidity, but this has been so bad that there's almost some truth to it. I think you have to, we can
justice
focus
for Vivek.
We can focus. Yeah. I have one guy cherry picking. We can, talk about fixing the defense and the rebounding. I'm not sure you really can. I think you have to fix the offense as well in those minutes. You can't shoot 26% and also get outworked on the glass and also not stop anyone. You have to fix one of the three. I think Lowry to the non-Embiid minutes is the move.
Guard Mello says, play Bamba. Done.
I'm going to have to go ahead and disagree with you there on that one. But I do think you do have to basically have everything on the table, right? This is, you're eliminated if you lose the next game or any of the next three. So
everything's up in the air. Yep. Everything. My question is very simple, and then we can get out of here. Do they have it in them? Do they have the resolve in them to win a game on the road? They've talked about backs being against the wall plenty. We saw them play playoff style basketball in the last couple of weeks of the season. And when they get to the playoffs, while they play well, they're still down 3-1. Do they have it in them to have enough resolve to win on the road to force it back here to Philadelphia for game six? So
I think they do. I'm not sitting here predicting they're going to win.
No, you said you wouldn't be surprised if there was a game seven. Yeah.
And the other side of it is it would irritate more Sixers fans by them winning at this point, I think, because people are now ready to just give up on the season. It's like, oh, God, another home game. And then we have to have the fan debate again. I selfishly don't want to pivot into off-season mode yet.
No. We're not used to this early exit. No, we are not.
Used to the second round exits, of course. But at least even the first round exit was in August because it was in the bubble in Disney World, right? So I hope that they put together, even if they lose tomorrow night, I hope they put together an effort that shows like they're going down fighting, right? Like what you don't want to see is for them to lay down and the Knicks to blow them out and we go into the offseason with just these catastrophic vibes. If New York is the better team, that's okay. Like it won't feel good in the moment, but you can at least come to terms with that. What you can't come to terms with is New York being the better team and they just outwilled you. And outfought you and outbattled you. That's what I think would be unacceptable coming out of that game. So play hard, adjust the offense a little bit. Frankly, you got to run more pick and rolls in the fourth quarter. I could not stand how many plays were just post up, post up, post up, post up. Some of that's because Joel couldn't move. But that was the counter that they didn't go to against the Knicks defense and how they were set up against it. So some adjustments, maybe a rotation tweak here or there, and we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, let's get.
And I'll be drinking Olipops. I'll tell you that.
Olipops,
tropical punch is delicious.
Oh, I know you were up watching. You were probably asleep because you were sick. Did you see
Ant-Man?
Well, that, of course.
Ant-Man was going crazy last night. Oh, he's
arrived. Did you see Finch get hurt and tear his tendon in his knee?
So
as they're trying to wind the clock?
I'm not laughing at Chris Finch getting hurt. Like, obviously, that was awful, and I feel bad for him. I hope he recovers quickly after he gets surgery. My buddy sent me a text. He goes, why are they surrounding him like they just put down a horse at the Kentucky Derby? They were all standing in a circle, pulling the towels up.
So you can't see it.
Like he was like the Kevin Ware injury where his bone came through his... So, like, I feel bad for him, but the visual is just like... All right, man. Like, he hurt his knee, and this is if I blew my patellar tendon, I'd be crying and, you know, just all kinds of emotions, whatever. I don't think I would ask for people to, like, hold the Gatorade towels up so no one can see my face.
Hey, man.
That was a little bit much. That's
and then
awesome.
Draymond
but shout
came
out to Chris Finch, by
Draymond
the way.
Draymond came out and said, prayers up for the coach, but come on, man. It's a couple of minutes left.
Minute 40 left. Come on, buddy.
Come on, man. Stick it out. Fight it out.
I won't go that far.
No,
I'm sure he's
like, come on,
I'm sure he's in a ton of pain. All that.
Yeah.
And I will say, shout out to Chris Finch. He was Derek's coach of the year pick prior to the season. I had Mark Dagno in Oklahoma City. Thankfully, my guy
give
won.
Him credit,
but
man. They
both
swept.
Coaches both did incredible Suns. Jobs this season.
They swept, the
sparked
Suns.
Turnarounds yeah. for their team. So I hope Chris Finch gets well soon. And I'm guessing we're going to see him on some crutches or some sort of assistance in round two. That is going to be an awesome series.
That's going to be it. And again, Anthony Edwards, outrageous. Ooh. He is outrageous.
He made three or four plays down the stretch where I was like jumping out of my chair.
He tweaked both of his ankles.
Go get him, man.
He tweaked both of his ankles. He changed out of the low cuts and put the regular ones on and came back and started cooking them again. He was busting their ass last night.
He was
all right,
crazy.
Let's get to the guys. Derek has to go. He needs some water.
Yeah,
some,
we got to send Derek to like
holes,
get some emergency or send him to CBS.
Who are we
or,
thinking here?
No, Rite Aid, I should
what
say.
What? I was going to say.
Winona says it was a prayer circle.
I was just thinking of urgent care. I don't. That's where the urgent care is by minutes. That's well. Shout out to Rite Aid.
They weren't a sponsor today anyway. So
yeah.
Shout out to Rite Aid.
All right, and shout out to all of our beautiful people that are here with us as always. Thank you to Kane, Money Mar, Aaron.
What up, Aaron?
My girl Winona.
Nona.
Our guy Al.
Gotta get the fruit punch. What up, Al?
The 2 minute warning. Vitor, AC, Phila, Freno. Phil W.
Phil,
who says Ant-Man has intensity, will to win.
Yes, he does.
That's right, Phil. Just like you with your intensity every day in the chat. We got Spiral Out, Remo K, X-Man.
What up, X?
The Hypothetical Man, Guard Mello, Provolone John,
Remo.
TN, Wawa Marvel. What an incredible name. And Wawa Marvel, by the way, was exceptionally positive in the chat today compared to most other people. So shout out to you.
I guess they're winning game five, Wawa Marvel.
Patrick Lever, Larry Jackson, Brian C.
What up, Brian?
Dave Cannoli.
Holy Cannoli.
Holy Cannoli is right. Snap Turner. Alex McCoy. Who we have in the super chats today?
Hey,
Bree.
Coach
Lowell Ricketts. We got Mark Jackson. We have Cannoli, and we have the name that I won't say that Devon said earlier. But thank you to Money Mars, troll, a troll within a troll
there
within the chat. We still love you for the super chat. Liam Stevens, so many other people in here today. Lauren Michaels,
Lauren
SNL
Michaels.
Maven
wow.
here with us today.
Wow.
What a treat. What a
that.
Treat.
What up, Lauren?
Guard Mello, by
put
the way,
put us on
says,
the show. Let us host the show.
Guard Mello says Sixers and seven. I
yes.
love the energy. Guys, if you have not already, hit that subscribe button on the way out. Hit the bell icon so you can get notifications each and every time we go live. And if you hit the thumbs up button, maybe, just maybe, there will be enough good vibes to power the Sixers to a resilient performance at Madison Square Garden on Tuesday night.
Jay, Sixers in seven.
Until then, we'll see you then. Devon will be here.
Watch along tomorrow.
For a watch along tomorrow. We will be back after post game Tuesday night. Win or lose, we'll be breaking it down. Thank you, everybody. And thank you to Super Producer Bree.
All silly like the mayor.